Morning, Judge.
Good morning.
Shall I?
You may proceed.
Thank you. I think the first thing we have to do is the housekeeping. I'm sharing this 10 minutes with able counsel seated at the table here. Mr. Grona, who is farthest away, is wanting to have a minute, and Mr. Edwards, 2.5, I believe, and I want to reserve roughly 120 seconds for rebuttal, so I think that gives me about 4.5 minutes. That's not a problem because I only have two little things to bring up, both involving the First Amendment. The first is that the Reliance Defense Package, quote, end quote, is, in our view, not subject to criminal prosecution when it's sold, and that it is not the defendant's burden to determine who is going to use it properly in the event they're charged with willful failure to file income tax returns, as opposed to those who would merely feign a belief that they didn't believe that there was indeed any law requiring them to file a tax return.
So it's absolutely protected. It can never be admitted as relevant evidence to establish whether or not there was intent to violate or obstruct the Internal Revenue laws?
Well, I wouldn't want to go quite that far, Your Honor, but it would have to be shown that it was in a context where lawless conduct was imminent. I think that's the test.
Isn't that why we ought to let this case go to trial, so that we can review a full record that shows us whether or not there was sufficient evidence to establish actual criminal culpability on the part of the co-conspirators?
I'm sure you won't be surprised to hear me say no.
Well, I understand. What's different about this case from a Fourth Amendment violation, where we say to the defendant, you're claiming that your constitutional rights were violated by this prosecution and that the conviction was sustained on the grounds of constitutionally protected evidence, but you got to wait till after the trial is over and then you raise it as part of your direct appeal?
Because this is a pure question of law and the burden on the First Amendment is too great to await vindication after conviction.
But a Fourth Amendment violation is normally a pure question of law, whether or not the evidence was seized in violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Indeed, but we're talking about free speech here and freedom of association, which doesn't really have anything to do with the Fourth Amendment.
What's your best case to say you get an interlocutory appeal when the First Amendment is involved?
United States versus PHE Incorporated would be our best case, Your Honor. There is no link logically or legally between the Reliance Defense Package, on the one hand, which the district judge didn't really quite get to it. She said, well, Mr. Hardy is trying to induce people to feign a belief that they're entitled not to file based on these materials. But she said, well, that doesn't really make any difference because count one also has allegations in it of fraudulent trusts, bankruptcies, and IRA rollovers. Therefore, count one charges an offense. We said, yeah, but there's no relationship between those two things. And furthermore, we have the Krasovich problem, Krasovich being 819F, second page 253, 1989 case that Your Honor wrote the opinion on, in which the problem there was the defendant was not on notice that the conduct in which he engaged had anything to do with a crime that was allegedly committed or that was committed. So that this is mere speech. These are opinions, Your Honors. The authors do not believe that people are required to file tax returns. And our clients are these two gentlemen represent individuals writing these opinion letters. But that's pure speech. There's no imminent lawless conduct. Also, the district court...
But how can we determine that without a context? I mean, you make that representation, but the real issue here is whether or not that evidence, coupled with whatever else the government is going to produce and whatever else the defense is going to offer in defense, establishes intent to obstruct the collection of the taxes. And I don't know how we can make that determination by simply looking at the package and saying, as a matter of law, this is or is not admissible at a criminal trial.
That's a different question. Whether it would be admissible to trial is one thing, to show something. But I'm saying that the Reliance Defense Package per se, which is confused and conflated in count one with these allegedly fraudulent acts, which could be, in fact, impairing, impeding, obstructing, defeating a lawful function of the IRS.
But don't
this speech is just opinion, Your Honor.
Don't we need to know whether or not the defendant who's charged with the crime did, in fact, rely on the contents of the package?
Well, the problem with that logically is that the package talks about not filing a tax return. Well, how this is imminent lawless non-conduct.
You really when are I, asking us to declare as a matter of law that this package is not admissible under the First Amendment for any purpose at the criminal trial. That's the only way we can grant you the relief, as I understand your argument.
Well, that's not my argument. This is not an in limine ruling. It's a statement that this charges pure speech which cannot be criminalized. The mere fact that it can't be criminalized doesn't mean that it can't be used as evidence of a crime.
Paying you for this?
I beg your pardon?
Were people paying you for this?
The Reliance? Yes, some were. Many were. But it doesn't have any utility in committing any crime. It's only possible employment would be after a charge of willful failure to file.
Weren't there allegations in the indictment of setting up trusts and doing other things besides just...
Right. There were in count one. And if that were the only thing charged in count one, I wouldn't be here. But...
Just the count you're talking about. Just the package count.
The package just doesn't have anything to do with those other things, Your Honor. And the district court never even tried to link it. She simply said, well, it's part of count one, and maybe it doesn't have anything to do with these other potential criminal acts here. And I said to the court, well, but it isn't intensified around April the 15th. And this imminent lawless conduct we're talking about is really imminent lawless non-conduct. It's failing to file a tax return.
Which is a crime.
No, willful failure to file one is a crime.
And you got to know, and they're back to my intent problem. So the question is whether or not this constitutes evidence of willfulness. Aiding, abetting, counseling, procuring, urging.
Well, it's doing is saying, if you don't file, this may be useful to you in defending the charges. So the real thing we're talking about here is criminal prosecution for failure to file. That's not a function the Internal Revenue Service is permitted by law to perform.
Well,
that's what the Department
Mr.
of Justice does.
I think we understand your argument. If you want to save any time for your
I do.
Counsel.
I do. And I also wanted to talk briefly, and I'll make it very brief, about the retaliatory prosecution aspect of this case on the basis of which we believe the entire indictment should be dismissed. And we just received 10 days ago a critically important piece of exculpatory evidence that's been withheld for the last 2 years with no legitimate basis, along with a bunch of other material.
You received this when?
The most recent submission was received in Honolulu June the 4th of this year.
Not a part of this record, then, I think.
It is incorporated in a motion to supplement the record on appeal that was just filed with the court this morning, along with other documents very recently produced. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. I represent Mr. Kaling in this matter. Essentially, my argument is very brief. It's to the point that Mr. Kaling is exercising his rights under the First Amendment by writing opinion letters. This is pure speech. It is a situation in which he generates an opinion based on his research, and he essentially tells people that what he has found and what his opinion is. He does not tell people not to file. He actually tells people that if you don't believe what I say, go talk to your own experts, your own advisors, in order to gain your own opinion. So essentially, this in its purest form is pure speech. It's an opinion. It's just like anybody that goes into a lawyer's office paying money to ask a lawyer for an opinion. It's like sports commentaries on the radio asking people give opinions all the time. This in its purest sense is pure speech. He was charged with writing these letters because people would pay him money. Now, whatever somebody does with those letters after the fact is not up to Mr. Kaling, because he certainly is not advocating imminent lawless action by don't file your taxes. He merely states, my opinion is that the tax system is voluntary, and you can volunteer to pay your tax, you can volunteer not to pay your tax. And that's essentially the basis of the letter. So in and of itself, Mr. Kaling's letter is, in its purest sense, it's an opinion. People may not like his opinion, but that's what the First Amendment is all about. That's what gives us the right to be the democratic society that we enjoy. And on that basis, the counts in that indictment relating to those letters should be dismissed.
How many counts were there altogether?
With Mr. Kaling, he was charged in count one. There are two counts in the indictment. The first count alleges the tax violations, inciting others not to file taxes. And the second part has to deal with Mr. Hardy's non-filing.
That's right. All right. Thank you.
Judges Barry Edwards, I represent Fred Ortiz, who better not be offering his opinion to anybody or he'll get indicted. That, in a nutshell, is my argument. The opinion...
Somebody addressed the question of our jurisdiction?
Yes, it has been addressed by Mr.
Cohan,
of course.
Well,
but
would you tell me again?
Fred Ortiz should not be tried in this case because of expressing his opinion under the First Amendment, an opinion which people have the opportunity to accept or reject at their decision upon reflection, which is not imminent. And in order for him to express his opinion, he has to have the opportunity under the First Amendment to do that. And when he expresses his opinion, if he's subject to an indictment such as this, that's wrong, and you should take jurisdiction and say it's wrong.
Help me again, because the charge that the actual crime that is being charged is the count that you're challenging is what?
371. It's the count which was discussed in the Caldwell case. It's the count which says that it's unlawful to impede or obstruct the administration of collection of revenue, basically, by the Internal Revenue Service.
Right? A Klein conspiracy. Conspiracy to obstruct the functions of
exactly.
The Internal Revenue Service.
Exactly. It's not a crime to make the government's job harder. It's not a crime to advocate illegal activity at some future time, like telling a gang how to run itself.
But what's your answer to the Chief's question? We got a Supreme Court opinion in Hollywood Motor Car that tells us that there are only three grounds on which one may obtain an interlocutory review: double jeopardy, the speech and debate clause, and I forget the third one. But this doesn't fit into any of the recognized exceptions, and the Supreme Court has told us we don't like piecemeal appellate review of criminal cases.
I understand, Your Honor. PHE is the best we've got, and we've cited it, and we've discussed it.
Is as good as it.
That's
can.
It. There's no other authority that we've been able to give you.
The thing about PHE, it seems to me, and you can disagree, it's a little bit like Dombrowski, where you enjoin a prosecution. You have to have some evidence that the intent of the prosecution is really not a good faith prosecution. They really don't want it prosecuted out. They're bringing some sort of a harassing action. Dombrowski, for instance, they used to start the prosecutions and then they'd dismiss them. And then they'd arrest somebody again and then they'd drop the charge and then they'd arrest somebody again. So finally somebody said, well, you're going to have to give an appeal here somewhere. But here you can get your appeal after the trial, if you lose.
I think that's right. An appeal can be taken after trial, and certainly there will be facts developed during a trial. But my point is this. Fred Ortiz is offering an opinion which persons have the opportunity to reflect upon. This is not, he's not standing at the doorhouse of the jail with his opinion in his hand, with people that are standing there with clubs and pitchforks saying, get in there and get that guy and go hang him.
So don't you make a Rule 29 motion at the close of the government's case in chief?
You bet, if I have to get that far.
And if that's the state of the evidence at that point, presumably that motion would be granted.
One would hope so, Your Honor, but that has not always been my happy experience in district court. Rule 29 motions are rarely granted.
Okay. So the jurisdictional answer is PHE is the best you got.
Jurisdictional answer is PHE is the best we've got. And my argument is that I disagree with Bill Cohan. I think that the reliance defense is something which can't be used to prosecute my client, because I think my client is doing nothing more than what's done in the library. If you go down in Hawaii, for example, pick up the Hawaiian Sovereignty Manual, which says you don't have to obey Hawaii laws or federal laws because Hawaii is not a state, it's a kingdom. Okay? That opportunity to reflect, the opportunity...
If you go out and sell...
Go out and sell it.
This to people saying, here is how you can... here's the reason what you can give for not obeying the law.
The Ninth Circuit, as you know, Judge, says that it is a defense to willful failure to file if a person has a good faith belief that they don't have to file an income tax return.
But a jury has to decide that.
A jury has to decide that issue, but that's not the issue in this case. In this case, the question is Fred Ortiz entitled to give an opinion that you don't have to file an income tax return? Period. And the answer is, under the First Amendment, yes.
Well,
and he shouldn't
United
be
States
indicted
Supreme
when
Court
he gives
said
it.
In United States versus Cheek that the answer might be no, depending upon how the advice was given, the good faith belief of the defendant in relying upon it, and to the extent that the person who offered the advice was implicitly aiding or abetting the defendant in not filing, then he could be criminally culpable as well. But that is a question that the jury has to decide.
So, Judge Tallman, if I take your position, so I give a cockeyed opinion that something is a certain way, and somebody doesn't believe it, but takes my cockeyed opinion and takes action based upon it and is prosecuted. I'm an aider and abetter because I gave a cockeyed opinion?
The jury thinks that in your heart of hearts it was truly a cockeyed opinion, or whether you were really aiding and abetting the violation of the tax laws and trying to pass yourself off as some kooky researcher. That may be a good defense, but until we see a record, I don't see how we can simply dismiss your client on your representation that all he was doing was giving advice. I just don't know what authority, as I read the Supreme Court cases, gives us the opportunity at this point interlocutorily to grant you the relief that you're seeking. That's the problem I'm having.
Well, I don't think I'm going to change your mind, Judge. But
You're going to have to change the Supreme Court's mind, because that's how I read the Supreme Court cases.
Okay, well, I think we're...
You understand my argument, at least.
Do.
Any other questions?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Counsel. Judge Tallman, the third situation that the Supreme Court has found is an order denying a motion for bail.
Yeah.
Of course, you figured out just you would remember it just.
I read the rest of the case while I was listening to Tallman.
I would like to address the jurisdictional issue. This Court does not have jurisdiction to consider the appeal. The Supreme Court, in the Librand case, Coopers and Librand, has a three-prong test. At least two of the prongs fail here. The defendant's First Amendment claims are not separable from the merits of the case against them. As this Court held in Freeman, where the indictment is for counseling, the circumstances of the case determine whether or not the First Amendment applies. This case has to go to trial. It has to go before the jury for the jury to determine whether or not the First Amendment protects the defendants from being tried.
How do you distinguish PHE?
I beg your pardon?
How do you distinguish PHE?
Relatively easily. In PHE, there were three district courts, three U.S. attorney's offices involved at least. The District of Utah, the Eastern District of North Carolina, and the Western District of Kentucky. In the District of Utah, the U.S. attorney and the then U.S. attorney and the AUSA proposed a plea agreement, basically telling PHE that the only way we will make this go away is that if you agree not to import any obscene materials into Utah, even materials that are protected by the First Amendment. It was very clear then that the government was trying to prevent the defendants from exercising their First Amendment rights. In this case, we are trying to prevent the defendants from selling and encouraging and assisting in the use of materials to promote tax evasion. This is not a case where we are trying to prevent the defendants from exercising their legitimate First Amendment commercial speech rights. This case is not just involving speech. The defendants were engaged in soliciting clients, selling materials for clients to use in case they were prosecuted, creation of false bank accounts and false trusts to use to hide income and assets from the government, and facilitation of early IRA withdrawals without the payment of taxes and penalties that were required. This is not a case where we're just trying to prevent the defendants from telling the world that they think the IRS, income taxes are not required.
What's the relevance of the fact that they sell these packets?
It shows that they're doing more than just speaking. I mean, they're engaging.
Well, you know, Tom Paine sold his pamphlets, and the New York Times sells its newspapers.
That is true. It's certainly not nearly as important as the other aspects, where they're promoting the use of false trusts and creating false bank accounts for use in concealing income and assets from the U.S.
Part of the allegations of count one, is that correct?
I believe it is. But it's certainly not the most important.
I'll look at the count. Yeah.
Now, as to whether Mr. Ortiz and Mr. Kaling should be dismissed from this case, under Caldwell, we have to prove that the particular defendant entered into an agreement to obstruct a lawful function of the IRS by deceitful or dishonest means. This case has to go to trial for the government to be able to prove that they were not just speaking, that they were active, knowing, willing participants in the conspiracy. Also, this court's decision in U.S. versus Kubel, the defendant's actions went beyond mere speech. Back briefly to the second prong of the Coopers and Librand test. The defendants have not shown that this is a case where they would not be able to preserve. It's not unreviewable on appeal. The case doesn't involve the right not to be tried. Unlike Midland Asphalt, Midland Asphalt says that the right not to be tried has to rest on explicit statutory or constitutional guarantee that the trial won't occur. That isn't here. U.S. versus Ambort, another Tenth Circuit case, held that the right to engage in commercial speech does not include the specific right not to be tried. If the court has no further questions, the government will rest on its brief. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, you've used your time, but we'll give you.
Can you give me just a couple minutes? Just a couple questions I have for this court. We just heard about the fraudulent bankruptcies, trusts, and so forth, and that's principally what the government believes it should prosecute. Let's assume the defendants are acquitted of that charge, and they never do that again. Can they still market their Reliance defense package?
Wait a second. Are you asking us? Are we now making the argument to you? Is that what we're doing here? That's not how we do this.
It's my request.
You want to leave that as a rhetorical question.
Certainly it's a rhetorical question, Your Honor.
All right. What's your next point?
That I would like Your Honors to take a look at the pattern of government misconduct here that has culminated in having withheld a statement that is totally exculpatory by Mr. Hardy that he made on July the 12th, 1984.
I think we don't have any of that in the record that was before the district court.
I realize that, but there's a motion that's been filed that presumably Your Honors will at least have the opportunity to look at. And the only reason it's not before Your Honors is the government stonewalled for 2 years until we got here.
We will carefully examine the record. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The matters just argued are submitted for decision. We'll hear the next case, which is United States versus Sock Sierra. You're going to help me with that pronunciation, please.